This is my second collection. It was published in 2001, and I read three poems in it. The first one is called The War Post Convention. It's about the man I met on the train going to Washington. He was a playwright, and we sort of got talking in the smoking section at 7 o'clock in the morning. The War Post Convention. The Philadelphians staggered across the sleeping states from Toledo, Ohio to Washington, D.C. In the segregated section, cigarette ends rolled in our feet like spent cartridges, or lay as the dead in the pit of a metal ashtray. The man told me that he had served in the Mekong Delta and Saigon, saw forests defoliated by Agent Orange, and villages where the children's body parts were stripped to the bone and bleached. Said he wanted no possessions, saw them as hostages to the vagaries of hags with bombs and bags and brazen bullets, owned only what he could carry on his lap, a black box, lid snapped shut, a sarcophagus for a soldier's summit. Then he asked me to read at the monument, but I know nothing of the anatomy of other battlefields. Did not belong, had little to say, to an army of posts demobbed in peacetime, hosting for Memorial Day. And the next one's called The Post in the War Field. If I can find it now, I'll be fine. I really should have glasses. My eyesight is not great at all. This is about a travelling lady. I couldn't even send her this because she has no address. No official address anyway. It's called The Post in Warfield. A daughter of Bridget sends a fire and invokes a blessing from the patron saint of Smith. Smooth out the kinks and warps of our ancestry with stories, hammers myths of nomads on slivers of tin, rivets handles onto buckets beaten into submission, on anvils of discarded engines, an alchemist melting baser metals, while we bellow out our lies and bank down the ashes, afraid that travelling sparks might kindle chaos in the normality of houses, contaminate our culture with the truth. And the last one I read from this is the Parliament of Crones. I like this poem. I used to live in a place called Fatima Mansions when I was a very young woman. It's a sort of big flat complex in Dublin owned by a Dublin corporation, and there were hardly any men there, so the place was ruled by women, and it was a fabulous place to live. Most of the women were old, and the husbands had gone to England, or the women had never married them in the first place, which was very unusual in the 70s and 80s. This is the Parliament of Crones. The Mother of God moved to Fatima Mansions when she was just past childbearing age, and the plaster skin that had molded her started to peel and fade. Bought a headscarf in Thomas Street and shed Persephone's girlish veils when all the old wives' cures and afters could not reverse the change. Wiped as she once did to her son the children's sticky hands that smudged and tugged and poked behind the curtains where the windows of heaven stand, dipped into the belly of a galvanized bath with baubles with braces of sunlight soap that burst on the ribs of washboard slats. slip on the soles of sodden slippers, apron bulge with embryos of pegs, down the steps where jade fruit splatters, the knotted nylons on her legs, pins for sorrows on the line, as brooches on our Sunday blouse, and long for a private space for grief, but never again yearn to live in a house. Teamed with a parliament of crones who sat for the summer session on thrones of old worn stone, due judgment on the teeth of banshee's cones, broke bread with the mothers of other carpenters, our sons and husbands on the dole. Thank you. This is called the song for Pauline. It's in memory of a young woman I grew up with. She died of breast cancer when she was 32 and left behind four small children going to buy. And she was just so gorgeous and just stuck in my memory. And I met her nephew in Germany when I was reading with Kate Hennessy's exhibition there last March. Kate is an artist. And she was having an exhibition, so I went through this poetry and I met her nephew. So, forward to our conversation, I wrote this poem. It's called A Song for Pauline. And it starts with a quotation. Break the string, full music wing, the poet Pauline, a baby sing. It's Robert Browning, One Way of Love. A Song for Pauline. Even the Beatles thought that you are so beautiful, singing their love words to you from the mesh mouth of a transistor radio on your dinner hour from Livingston's and Spencer's, the clothing factory. The hem of your hair treading the embroidered leaves of a privet hedge. Summer sandals dangling as you sat on the garden walls. David Bailey would have winked at you, flirted with the eye of his camera, like you did on your man on the bike from Willow Park, as your fingers caressed the bodice of a Florence pattern dress that you had fashioned for yourself. When it came to style, Pauline Walden, you could have given the ones in Paris, London, or Milan a run for their money. My clumsy fingers could never hold the needle. All I could ever do was stitch images to words. But in the seam of the snagged and tattered fabric that covers my heart, I will always be 11, and you, turning the wheel of the sewing machine towards 16. Even the Beatles thought that you were so beautiful, and they were not the only ones, hon. My partner, Liam Mulligan, died 2.5 years ago. We were going to Dublin on a train and he just put his head on my shoulder and he died within a couple of minutes. And I suppose my publisher, Michael, said this poem was a lament to him. So it's called Isis on Edward Street. Once the moon was an amulet on a chain of stars, and your fingers the clasp around my heart, but they are prizing apart now, strand by delicate strand, since Sirius has died in your eyes, blue light without filaments on Edward Street, hieroglyphs of faded memories, scoured by time and rain, hunkered at the base of a Rosetta Stone, beside the barracks wall. Yet May has come once again, and the year has turned twice. The eye of Horus is squinting sunlight to the leaves of a horse chestnut. A resurgent spark has restored something to me after my long stay in the house of the dead on the other side of the Nile where you still dwell. And my body is railing against the imposition of wood and soil, as the roots of trees do against concrete and turf. Still there are nights, if I could only shred the sheets on my bed, infuse them in the tears of onion, smear with oozings of rosemary, bind you limb by limb, fuse sinew, tissue and tendon, to remember you, to remember you. Take your heart from the canopic jar on the shelf and coax it back to trotting. But all these things are beyond my powers, Osiris, my love, my love. I must go now to walk alone, the soles of my sandals leaving silver imprints of crescent moon from the Rosetta Stone to the chestnut tree. My sons are musicians in Galway, and my son John, who's a guitarist and a composer, he was living in Fatima Mansions and a place called O'Devney Gardens in Dublin, and the band was looking for a drummer, but they were all afraid to go in to put areas to audition, so he was very down about it at the time. So I wrote this poem from called Inquire to Me on Baggot Street. At reception in Baggot Street, the kind where you juggle literary names, pretensions to fame, wine glasses and cigarettes, punctuate cliches on cocktail sticks, a woman behind me spoke as if she was chewing golf balls. I overheard her comment about me. Hoping to claim to be a writer, with an atrocious of an article like that. Well, I have news for you, Mrs. I can, and I do. Words on a page are accentless. When read, they reverberate in one's head. So if we ever meet on Baggot Street, maybe I'll remember you, clutching your goosey badge and goosey our poem. Oh, she was a common one. Run to the one. She was a common one, I tell you. Look at the page here. This is called Nigerian Isles, a sort of south explanatory, of course. Here in the village of Iera, the pipes have corroded, and oil as slick as a carpet cover up spits into the lake. We cannot drink. Our lips are as blistered as the landscape along the Niger Delta. A huge scorch trees lay their fingers and pray to the spirits of Ken Sarawiwa, leader of us Ngoni people hanged in Port Harcourt jail. Send us your courage to shout once again at those with teeth shaped like shells, and make them swallow the lies they print and blast from TV stations that all things black are here to be exploited. And I'll just read Ulu Sinium from this collection. It's about an early memory, I suppose, of falling off the back of a motorbike. I told my mother this story about 25 years later, and it was a massive row for about a week. But it's Illusinium, anyway. You put your new war horse through its paces, led him around the little garden in Ballyfermot, petrol throbbing in his heart, one foot danced on the stilts. Sorry, I find it very difficult to see. One foot danced on the stirrup, told the other one of our disciples, and I jumped up behind. We roared with triumph as you turned the key and the beast farted into life. But when we reached the 7 block near English Pub, I fell. Standing on the bridge, I waved you off. I learned early that sometimes men have better things to do. Instead, I tried to play knots and crosses with brassy pods and free notes fossilized in the lime scale. Below me, I could hear a whispering as seductive as one of your fairy tales and followed it down the bank. Harsh tongue gossip with red valerian alluded in the walls. Mother of thousands trailed her fronds all the way down to the water and hummed. An old washing song gleamed from granite brought all the way from Darcy. Tramped to horse tails of grass and reeds, left my sandals to rest with glyceria and rue. Stopped to touch a toadflax, the flower of desolate places. Preened myself in the watery mirror. My scissors was only in the halfpenny place. A mallard and her cheek swam by and clucked. A yellow lily shook her head, disdainful of his vanity. Poked my image with a stick into shards of mica. Splayed my wet fingers and saw a wagtail playing with a turnstone. Greeted him like a friend. Born in an eggshell, christened in a handcart, he hopped up and settled his fingers on my hand. I could hear the engine in the distance before you stopped and scrambled down the bank, calling out my name. Tessie, me heart, me chicken. In your amber eyes were trapped small specks of anger and pain, and your fingers shook as you plucked a lollipop of pink clover from my mouth. Through the fabric of my summer dress, I could feel the wealth in your shoemaker's hands. Before you swung me into the air, I was a fuchsia held on a graceful stem. I think I lost my fear of death that day and never could accept the concept of hell. My childhood wisdom knew it for what it was, just a shadow projected from the darkest part of the self. I have faltered and fallen many times since, but believe when my walking and gathering is done, you will halt at the corner where Kilmainham meets Inchicore, come galloping back to find me. Thank you. I'll read one more for Edward, since he liked this poem so much. I wrote this last summer. I was up in Dublin doing a reading for schools, and midsummer's morning was horrendous. I think we had worse weather than we had today. So I wrote this when I was in the hotel called the Hellfire Club in two parts. The mountains that claimed my heart in girlhood are flirting with me still, batting their eyelashes of fir trees to the glass wall of the hotel, shrugging off the shawls of mist from the curves of their shoulders on midsummer morning, as they once seduced me from the window of my grandmother's house in Sumner. They were always on my horizon, and I was sick for the sight of them. Lugmore, Killinarden, and the square-cut diamond of the Hellfire Club set on Mount Tellier Hill, part two. The flashlight of faltering moon gleaming over gritted stones, as blind as moles we stumbled between the shadows of pine, his hand holding mine, eclipses of oil beneath his fingernails as we followed the tracks of cloven hooves. Proud of his manhood, still he shuddered at the sudden hooting of an owl and the scurrying of paws over needles and weeds. And inside the Hellfire Club, the serpent was a coil of rope discarded on the concrete floor, and it hissed at us with a twisted tongue. And the atavistic knowing in me lured his flesh to mine with my fingers and my mouth into the darkness and waited for the alchemy of sunlight to transform the wintry shell into an enchanted castle, and he, like a young prince, hunkered outside the walls, surveying the city below, the sooty fingerprints of trees, swatches of green and indigo fields, and far away the fabled waters of Dublin Bay. Not corrupt, he said, the mists and mediocrity of middle age. To me, you will always be as lovely as morning, and gravity will never smudge the contours of your face. The moon has eclipsed the sun many times since I last saw the face of the man who had claimed my heart in girlhood, and on certain midsummer nights I am sick for the sight of him, proud of his manhood at 18 and 15.